Episode 69.
And the fact that we would spend our lives in the doing this, in being the butcher, baker, candlestick maker, there's nothing wrong with those professions. But this book talks about the fact that we are meant to be more than that, to aspire to create. So if you're a technician, if you enjoy working 6 days a week and until your hands are bloodied and come home, and if that's your aspiration for life, that's all fine and dandy.
Because I didn't realize that I was going to love doing HR work or listening to an employee who has problems at home. This is not what I love to do. I know it's part of it and it's what we have to do. I had no idea that I was going to have to do that. What I loved doing was turning wrenches. And guess what? I'm not turning wrenches anymore. Okay. And that's one of the things that you have to do in order to work on the business instead of in the business.
Jim Rohn said it. He said, some people, they learn from their own failures. Some people learn from the failures of others. The smartest man learns from the successes of other people.
Welcome to an audio-only rebroadcast of a face-to-face video podcast. Face-to-face is a single topic discussion with multiple guests in a video setting. Find the video replay to all face-to-face discussions on the face-to-face page on the Remarkable Results website. Hello, aftermarketers. Carm Capriotto here, and welcome to episode 69, a face-to-face podcast roundtable discussion on Michael Gerber's book, The E-Myth. As you know, Remarkable Results podcasts are an audio learning lab for all members of the industry to best know, appreciate, and understand not only the service professional in depth, but all things aftermarket. Hey, I got a great review the other day with the theme of Cracker Jacks. Yes, Cracker Jacks. I really appreciate the great review, but the message was strong, and I quote, "It's like finding that surprise toy buried in that box of Cracker Jacks. Every box, there's something different," end quote. Well, thanks to Breeze78 for the great review and insight into the passion I hold for your content. Now, episode 69. You are listening to the audio-only version of the face-to-face video podcast on the E-Myth by Michael Gerber. You can watch this episode on my site, the face-to-face page, or use this audio-only version when you're traveling, commuting, or when you can't be in front of a screen. If watching the video replay, there's an internet glitch, so you will stumble upon a few very short segments where it's slow and jumpy. Bear with it to get the great content inside this episode. I fixed it in the audio version. Michael Gerber's E-Myth is a very powerful book that serves up the entrepreneurial myth. It's a must-read book for all entrepreneurs. I won't serve up the premise of the book now because I do it in the beginning of the episode. This is a must-watch or listen-to-episode and one that you may come back to over and over again. My guests are Bill Nalu of Interstate Auto Care, Greg Skolnick of Motorworks, and Jerry Kazaya from The Auto Shop. Here we go. Welcome, everyone, to the Remarkable Results Face-to-Face podcast. My name's Carm Capriotto. We have a heck of a great subject, and we've got three luminaries that, and I hope I hope Greg.
Wow, luminaries. Wow.
Luminary.
Wow. Speak for yourself.
What does that mean? I'm not sure.
Yeah, well.
Illuminati?
You've seen The Godfather. Okay. The reason we're doing this stuff, connect with our podcast audience and engage the tribe to have a multiple two-way conversation, because you can ask questions on the left, especially if you're watching and listening on the Blab platform. But if you're live and watching this right on the remarkableresults.biz face-to-face page, we don't even know that you're there, but you don't need a Twitter handle to be on that. And that's great. And you can tweet out up to the top left, tell the world of your followers what's going on. E-Myth, Michael Gerber, who's on with me? Well, there's Jerry Kazaya. And, you know, Jerry, when we replay this back, you're all in different positions. So if I call your name, could you raise your hand? Jerry Kazaya, episode 35 on the podcast. And he's from the auto shop in Plano, Texas. He's been in business since 1981, and he's got a pretty big shop, about 35,000 square, 21 lifts. And Jerry has a business coaching and mastermind group that he leads. He's made the leap to working on his business from then working in it many, many years ago. And a great quote from episode 35, and this is the classic, it's almost like the E-Myth, Jerry. If you remember, you can't do business from a creeper.
And oh, it's the same like tenet it. As the E-Myth. And he learned that in the 70s because he was trying to convince his dad to run his business differently. Great episode. Bill Nalu, episode 39. And Bill's from Interstate Auto Care in Madison Heights, Michigan. 30 years in the business. You don't look it. To include some time as a Shell dealer. He and his brother are partners in the business. And we talked about the E-Myth in his episode. And I call yes. Bill my podcast philosopher. And you are in a treat from this very wise man.
Oh, wow. Now, high praise. Thank you.
Greg Skolnick. And I know Greg is going to make it. And, you know, the last time we talked to Greg, he was in Arizona. So it's probably he's probably home now in Maryland. He's from Motorworks in Rockville, Maryland. He's owned his shop for 37 years. Greg has a 3,000-square-foot facility with six bays and an alignment bay. Greg's business is open 200 days a year. That's a four-day work week. He specializes in Honda and Toyota platforms. He's certified master automobile technician and holds the L1 certification. He's also received the accredited automotive management degree from AMI. He's worked with a business coach for 12 years and does coaching for other service professional entrepreneurs. And you can hear Greg in episode 46. And we had him on the business coaching episode, which was a few episodes back. Well, guys, what I want to do is I want to actually set up for all of our future listeners. And thank you for Muhammad joining us. Great. We've got some wonderful guests, and I appreciate that. You can always ask us questions in the question pane on the left-hand side of the screen. And as people will listen to this podcast, both video and audio, over and over again, and we point people to it. We say, hey, listen, you got to go listen to this E-Myth podcast. I think the key is, it's all about the E-Myth. And there's a lot of people that may not know what the E-Myth is. So I want to give a 2 or 3 minute overview. The book's about the myth of entrepreneurialism. Many small business people are working very hard for very little return, meaning hard work, low return. Sound familiar? The book's a must read for small business people. It's the story of Sarah, the pie maker. She was a great pie maker, and that's about it. You would think, as I relate to our automotive business, as many people are technicians, that she was a technician because she really knew how to make good pies, like many technicians know how to really fix good cars or really fix cars good. Many shop owners today work very hard in their business. They're stressed out workaholics. They live month to month through good and bad times, permanently chained to the business because it cannot run when they're not there. The entrepreneurial myth, if you understand the technical work of a business, you understand a business that does technical work. You don't know how to do anything else in the business, but is, as in our case, turn a wrench. Gerber called it the grand opening to liquidation. A business is not a business, but a place to go to work. There are three personalities that need to run a business: the entrepreneur, the manager, and the technician. Now think about this. Carpenters, electricians, and plumbers, what do? Well, they become contractors. Barbers, they open up a shop. Hairdressers, well, they start a beauty salon. Musicians, hey, I'm a great musician, I'm going to open up a music store. And a great technician, they open up a repair shop. All believing that by understanding the technical work of the business, that they are immediately and eminently qualified to run a business that performs that kind of work. Well, Gerber says it's simply not true. To succeed, you need to be all three, an entrepreneur, a manager, and a technician, meaning you need to work on your business, not in your business. So there's the prep for the book and the reason that we're here. I have a thought starter for us all. So Gerber says there are three personalities needed to run a business: entrepreneur, manager, and technician. I just said that. So when you first started, what were you, Jerry?
I was definitely a technician.
Okay.
I was definitely the guy turning the wrenches and trying to run the business at the same time. So I was answering the phones, talking to the customer. I was working on the cars, ordering parts. Yeah. You know, I was the one man band.
Did you have entrepreneurial stuff in you?
Of course. Yeah. My dad started his shop in 1946, and I was literally raised to run the business. I was running his shop when I was 15 years old.
Did you ever have to make a leap and figure it all out?
Did I ever have to make a leap?
A big leap to be
like
to
a leap
be
of a, faith. Oh, good
yeah,
God!
A leap every of faith into entrepreneurialism.
Sure, you have to. You know, when you first sign your name on that lease, I'll tell you, honest to God, it was crazy. But I signed my lease, and I got my bank loan, and I went and spent $20,000 buying new equipment, or rebuilt equipment, or filling up my shop with the stuff I needed to run, and I went home and puked my guts out. I thought, what did I do? Right?
I get it. You were sick.
I was sicker than I realized. Right? And it took years to fix it.
Bill, how about you?
Definitely not a technician starting out. You know my story, Carm, is I had to take auto mechanics because I had a wise father that chose to let me sink in the shallow waters and not let me drown. But it shaped my world. So in my case, I was fortunate enough not to have gone into it as a technician. I went to Wayne State University and I earned a bachelor's degree in business. And it was after having graduated from Wayne State University,
buddy.
I worked for Volkswagen of America.
Quite a challenge today, guys.
Oh, there is great. And so having done the corporate world for about a year, and that was all I could handle at that point in time, I knew at my core, I'm a control junkie, and I needed to be the tyrant. This was not going to be a democracy. And so I spent, the next 10, 15 years of my life hiring and firing and fighting and until finally one day the skies opened up and I came across this incredible piece of literature. I'm not exaggerating when I say I probably learned more from the E-Myth than I probably learned in the 2 years of business school. It's an amazing, amazing piece of work.
Gerber serves it up so succinctly.
Yeah. And it's not fair
punches,
for the purposes of,
the, so
of this evening.
Sense.
It's not fair for, because I haven't read any of his other works, but he sort of approaches this in the doingness of, I was that the description that he gives is that, you give this Herculean effort and effort. We gave it. We worked it. My brother and I took basically a year and a half, 7 days a week, 18-hour days is what we worked. And we never, ever lost money because you couldn't afford to lose money. You had no reserves. So you put literally everything into it. But
So guys, were you working your butt off? For how many years were you working your butt off?
It depends.
Return?
When we're talking about return, the money was coming in all the time because you literally willed it through sheer time and effort. The problem is that a sufficient return on your investment as a human being? And I submit to you that it was not. In the big picture, when you survive it, when you survive the first 5 years, as Michael puts it, the 80% of the first, the 80% of the businesses fail in the first 5 years, and then 80% of the 20% remaining fail in the next 5 years, until finally one day you realize, I'm getting older here. At this point in time, I should be getting wiser, and the wisdom starts seeping in. You start to realize it's really not in the doing. It's not in the doing. What is it that I want to be here? And that's sort of, I guess,
Jerry,
we'll segue into that at some point later on.
You worked for Dad's business, but when you went off and on your own, did you work your butt off in order to make any money?
Yes, we did. As a matter of fact, we were clock midnight, and that I ran meant a lot of because they could not keep up with the HT4100 explosions that were going on, replacing camshafts and lifters and whatnot. So we were helping out a couple of the Cadillac stores. Really great experience for us. The problem is that my techs were getting exhausted, and we found that our recheck ratios were going through the roof. Morale was going through the sewer. We were working our butt off and had really nothing to show for it. So I instigated, okay, everybody leaves the office now at 5 o'clock. You do not get here before 7:30, and we're working 5 days. And I'm going to tell you, it was amazing. We made such huge, drastic changes, and we found that morale was through the ceiling. Rechecks were zero. okay? When you're doing heavy engine work, zero rechecks is huge, especially with what we were working with, right? And everybody was making money. They were more efficient, more productive, happier people without killing themselves.
And you, so you actually stepped out of the business and made some bold entrepreneurial decisions.
I did. I said, you know what? If I'm going to go bankrupt in this business, I'm not going to be so freaking exhausted that I can't at least find something else to do. And so we started making changes. This was back in the mid 80s when Cadillac was having all that issue. So it was a huge game changer for us. Just in the fact that, you know, you think, okay, for example, you think, man, the harder I work, the better I'm going to do. The harder I work, the more I put my shoulder into this, the more I'm going to get accomplished. And we found that it's actually just the opposite, guys, that happened in our world. And the harder we worked, the more time we put in, God, we were just dragging butt. And we were so exhausted, we couldn't even pay attention to the minor little details. So we had to literally step away, step back, and regroup on this thing and say, okay, how can we make this better? And this has been my goal since the mid-80s is every day, how do we make this business a better business? How do we make it better for the employees? How do we make it better for our clients?
And Greg, you started, you were a good tech. And what was your leap all about?
Amazing technology. I sort of started as a technician and sort of picked stuff up really, really fast. I'm very focused that way. I mean, I am a technician. That's my personality. The difficulty that I had really was in being able to convert that from being a technician into being a business person. And I know that was kind of an interesting journey. And this is one of those things that I think that this book will really make a big, huge difference if you pick it up and can get your head wrapped around some of the concepts here, because it is a pivotal point in my life back then.
So what was your defining moment? What was the moment that you went from technician to entrepreneur?
Okay.
How long into
it was
your...
really about, let's see, I started in the end of 1979. So it was about 1983, 84, somewhere in there where things, you know, that's the point where you realize that things are actually moving and you're seeing clients on a regular basis and you're having enough, there's money coming in and things are actually working. It took us a couple of years to do that, but it was kind of a sitting on the edge of the curb one night after work going, well, what next? You know, and it really came to a point where in order to make this really work properly, I realized that I had to sort of make some changes and had to start focusing on the numbers in the business, first of all, and actually making it, growing it from that point. Yeah.
Technicians to manager to entrepreneur. So many things.
Yeah.
Finances, marketing, human resources, sales, today, all the technology issues. Bill, was there a big moment that you said, hey, I kind of like this marketing thing. And, you know, I don't have to turn wrenches. And if that happened to you, tell us about that leap. Because I think the replay is going to be about helping the current group of technicians that we have out there to figure out what to do next or where to go for the help that they need.
I'll give you the quick 10-second version of this. I'm sort of the opposite of how the rest of the industry. You hear 9 guys out of the 10 say that they were mechanics. They're, you know, second generation, third generation, you know, took over dad's business and all that. In my case, I'm not only first generation auto repair, I'm first generation American. You know, in my case, I came into it as a business major. And what happened was I had technicians who raised me. And what the problem was, is I came into it as a marketer. But because of the fact that I was buried in the work, in the doingness of it, I was convinced by my technicians, and I take full responsibility for it, by the way. This is not, I'm not blaming anybody here. This is just the fact of the matter. But I was convinced that what you have to do is you just got to put more effort into it. You got to buy the more equipment. You've got to just double down on the doingness of it. And I guess my point about this is, to get a little philosophical here, is consider that everything in your space right now, in your rooms, was at some point in time, everything that we're looking at, the technology that we're engaging in right now is an invention. It was a thought, pure creation in the mind of somebody who imagined something more than we currently have. Yes. There are literally miracles before us. The fact that we're having this conversation across the country right now. And so Michael, what he's touching on is the fact that we're pure creative beings. And the fact that we would spend our lives in the doingness, in being the butcher, baker, candlestick maker, there's nothing wrong with those professions. But this book talks about the fact that we are meant to be more than that, to aspire to create. So if you're a technician, if you enjoy working 6 days a week and until your hands are bloodied and come home, and if that's your aspiration for life, that's all fine and dandy. But do you really think the creator of the entire universe says, you know what, the best I have for Bill is that he's going to work 6 days, maybe 7 days for the rest of his life? Surely God has a bigger plan for us.
Well, that's not a bad idea to take a leap, isn't it? What more and what better things can I do? Now, you guys have you coach, some of you have been coached before. Do you credit taking that move out to get coaching and to be engaged in coaching, learning KPIs, learning all the stuff that it really takes to be a good entrepreneur, good manager, as part of that E-Myth tactic?
So I'm going to go out here and go first. I'm going to say that I think coaching, first of all, makes us aware of things that we don't even know we're not aware of yet. If you have the right coach.
Don't know what you don't know.
Right? A good coach can ask questions that you didn't even know the questions were there, much less answers for them. Okay. A second thing is a good coach will look at and evaluate the entire situation and help you get to your personal next level with whatever that is. And it may be, maybe you go from working 7 days a week to 6 days a week. And maybe you go from 7 days a week to shutting down and only working 5 days a week. But you have to have a good coach that's going to be able to help you walk you through there and give you sometimes even give you the courage to do it yourself.
Yeah.
It seems to be a tactic in getting into the E-Myth principle. If you can't do it yourself, then get an accountability partner to help you.
Well, again, it goes back to you don't know what you don't know.
Right, right, right.
You know, as Bill said, look at what we have today. It was in people's imaginations not that long ago, right? So if we were talking about having a podcast 10 years ago, people would have looked at you like you were out of your mind. What do you talk about a pod? What's a pod? That's a pea thing, right? You eat those? Right. But today, I mean, we didn't even know that there was such a thing as a podcast. Well, my God, if you're starting off as the technician in your business and you want to talk to someone like one of us who's been in the business for almost 40 years, we're going to tell you some things that you don't even know to look for. Is that fair?
Yeah, I got something. I got fair. Something to talk about a little bit because at least Greg, for Bill? Me, the concept of working on my business was something that I had difficulty in understanding at first. But there's a statement, I'm one of these people that really kind of likes to pull little quotes out of the book itself, because it's like it's almost like a soundbite to me, because it really makes it hit home with me. And so I got one that I want to read to you guys. So it says, once you recognize that the purpose of your life is not to serve your business, but that the primary purpose of your business is to serve your life, you can then go and work on your business rather than in it, with a full understanding of why it's absolutely necessary for you to do so.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Right. I almost, is that like page 93? Where is that? Sorry to be so technical on you guys, but I did some rereading of that book just recently to make sure I prepared.
These are the kind of things that I'm talking about.
How powerful the statement.
Once you get wrap yourself around the concept that the business is an entity all by itself, and you're not the slave to it. Okay. It is, you have to take care of it just like a garden, and you have to tend it like a garden if you want to get vegetables or flowers or whatever. But you, it's not something that you're a slave to. And I can tell you this, on the very first day I opened my business, my wife called me at 6:12. We left, closed at 6 o'clock. And she called me at 6:12 and said, "When are you coming home? You got a baby." You know, it's like, "I'm on my way, honey," you know, and all of us will get to that. But there's this balance that has to be met, that the guys that are struggling, they're really struggling in businesses right now because they just don't know, like you said earlier, what they don't know. They don't know what they don't know. Okay. So they just have to get off this concept that they know everything, because they're independent businessmen and women, and they know everything there is to know. And it has nothing to do with what they're really dealing with.
So I get that. And I ask that question during every podcast. When I interview an entrepreneur, I ask him, "Tell me about your work-life balance." And that is so critical, especially when you're in a startup mode. It rarely exists, except for you, Greg, when you saluted your wife, because we all know that a happy wife is a what? That's right.
That's right.
Yeah, I got to thank Frank Butkus Lloyds, who is on with us. He's in the house. You guys can see him off on the right. Episode 25, another fabulous, fabulous episode. And we just got Michael Rebus, it looks like, joined. Thanks for coming on, Mike, and everybody.
May I suggest one thing? Carp, if we're talking about training, this is a interesting thing. If we probably have heard it in some shape or form over the years, but CEO's got his people in the room, and one of the bean counters says to the CEO about the cost of training, mm-hmm. and he says, what if we spend all this money on training and they leave? Yeah. Right. To which the CEO says, What if we don't? Yeah. And they say
that is such a powerful statement.
And so to carry that further, every one of us at some point in time, I guess I'll speak for myself here. I know I'm guilty of that. There were years that went by that if there's a dividend coming, as if, you know, there was, you know, paychecks, time. Any amount of money that needed to be spent was spent on tools, equipment, employees, renovation, all of that stuff. And not until I started spending money on myself. And when I say that, is the investment in time, giving myself the time and the permission. Because at one point I didn't think I had the permission to leave. It's my, you know, my name's on the building. You know, I need to be here, because if I'm not here, the world falls apart. And one day, in a Snap-on seminar, there was a gentleman. His name was Ned Tamarchio. Phenomenal, phenomenal mind. You guys, I don't know if you guys ever heard of him. He brought this to bear. He said, you guys are all the hardest working people I know. He said, you think if you died of a heart attack tomorrow, your customers love you. I understand they love you. But you think if you died tomorrow, you think people are just going to say, well, you know what? I don't think I'll ever get my car fixed again. You know, I feel so bad. My heart's broken that Bill's no longer on this earth. They're going to find somebody to get their car. Life goes on. The next day,
they're going to find somebody.
Okay. So here's a big question, Bill, and I appreciate that. Have you gotten your business to work without you then?
I have. I would say I have. I have. But here's the thing, though, is I don't. There's days when I don't want the business to work without me. Here's what I figured out is the doingness, the Michael Gerber that is in the E-Myth is talking about bigger, better, more, franchising, right. Scaling, you know, becoming the biggest, whatever. After all the years of in my 50th year at this point in time, I have to say, I don't need a second location. I don't need to be the biggest, baddest on the block. And that's not to knock the folks that want to be that. What I found out was that I am no longer involved in the doingness. I don't want to be a business owner. What I really want is I want to have a customer walk in the door and sort of look at me sideways when we're talking about a car repair, and all of a sudden it turns into, well, this is your son's car, and now all of a sudden we start talking about why is it that you're bringing your 21-year-old son's car in for repairs. Where is he in this? And all of a sudden, we start talking about parenting. All of a sudden, we start talking about accountability and responsibility. And all of a sudden, there's a beautiful relationship that is formed. And I can't tell you how many of my customers.
What did I tell you, huh? Philosopher, he's the podcast.
It's just a. That
guy
feeds my
is
soul.
The podcast philosopher. I'm an answer. I got it.
So what I come away from is whether I'm in the car repair business or whether I'm in the pie baking business, I want to have conversations with really interesting people walking in the door to make their day and my day at the same time. To say to somebody, I see you, I see me inside you, I see you inside me. That's what we're here for on Earth. We're not here to fix cars.
Yeah.
Surely we know it's more than cars.
It's one of those things, though, I will say, and I totally agree with Bill, that the book does talk about prototyping your business and making it so that you can make what I think you said, 100 different shops and or 5,000 shops. And they would put, okay, some 5,000 shops and they would be all
five,
exactly the same.
No, 1,000. I think you're some crazy number. Yeah,
As much as I like that idea, it's not realistic. Because and what Bill is alluding to is the relationships we have with each of our clients, which is so crucial and so critical, because these are people that are on this planet at the same time we're on it. And we have something to say, they have something to say as well. So our the relationship is really what this is about. The repairing of the car is the means by which we maintain those relationships. But it is really much more important than just turning wrenches on cars. So
why do I get a feel that local is becoming more important than ever?
Because the big boxes they don't have any concept on real customer service. That's why. And people are getting tired of just being a number. Yeah. You know, when you walk into the big box stores and you're looking up and down the aisle praying for one of their employees to go, can I help you? And you know, it just doesn't happen. Right. When they come into, you go to a dealership, the dealerships cannot take care of a customer's vehicle the way we do. Do they have different equipment? Can they do different trainings than what we can get? You bet they can, because that's sponsored and paid for by the dealers, by the manufacturers themselves. But you know what? You will never talk to the owner of the dealership about your car problem. It's just not going to happen. And when they come in and we shake hands with them, it takes on a whole new meaning. So local is becoming more and more, as the world gets bigger and bigger, local is becoming more and more important. And we can charge for that too.
So I have a question for all three of you. Here's a question for all of you, and I'd love to each of you to answer. Have you gotten to the level where you are doing the work you love to do rather than the work you have to do?
I can go first. It just pops into my head like this, that I think that question is a little bit, I want to say unfair, because I didn't realize that I was going to love doing HR work or listening to an employee who has problems at home. This is not what I love to do. I know it's part of it and it's what we have to do. Am I at a point where I had no idea that I was going to have to do that? What I loved doing was turning wrenches. And guess what? I'm not turning wrenches anymore. Okay. So and that's one of the things that you have to do in order to work on the business instead of in the business. And so you have to start learning how to work with people and how to listen properly, how to be a good listener. Those are things that I didn't know how to do when I first got into business. So I think I enjoy it. I enjoy aspects of it, but mostly what I enjoy is working with clients. That's primarily what I'm about.
That is a very, very powerful soundbite out of this. I don't enjoy HR, but I got to do it. Why? I made the leap from tech to manager to entrepreneur. And it still tells the world it's not easy. I mean, you just don't go out and say, oh, I can't wait in 10 years. I can do nothing. Because that's what I like to do.
It doesn't work that way. It's not real. It's not realistic. So I think some of the questions, when you ask a question like that, you know, I know this, the sound bite that talks about, you know, if you love your job, then you're not working a day, you know, in your life. And that's all.
Yeah, never worked a day
in your life, that's awesome. And I do think that there are days that I just, really don't like it at all. And there are days that I'm really feeling pretty good about it. So, and I think the other guys.
Okay. What percentage of the days did you love? More than 50%?
I'm only open 4 days a week. Okay. So that's, I'm already, you know, 4 out of 7, right? So, I think I'm enjoying it. I am enjoying it. And especially with my crew that I have now, my guys are fantastic and they get it. They get it. But realistically, one of the reasons I can't multiply my store number, like Bill was saying, is that I don't really need a second store because I don't have two of me. Okay. And if I get a second, and what's happening here is that I'm creating the culture. Okay, of the business. I create, my core values are what create the way we do business. Yes, I can put in SOPs and we have policies and we have all those types of things, but it really comes down to the individual person who you're dealing with right in front of you, whether it's an employee or whether it's a client or whether it's a vendor, whoever, you know, it's how you interact with that person. And that's crucial.
Thanks so much. Bill, how about you? You doing what you love to do?
God says that you cannot have anything that you want. The reason that you cannot have anything that you want is because of your mere declaration that you want something means that you don't understand that you already have everything that you could ever want and need. Until I understood that, and that's not E-Myth. That is a book called Conversations with God. Until we understand that it's not in the wanting of something and in the needing of something, and it is, and what brings that, what brings more of what you couldn't possibly imagine, is pure gratitude. I'm grateful for the days where that glass is half empty. I'm more grateful than those days. Than the days when that glass is half full. The reason for that is because I can step back and look at the entire glass, look at the entire beauty of that glass. Now, I know people are going to say, what the hell are you talking about? You're in the auto repair business. To which I would say, I am not in the auto repair business. I am not in the auto repair. I'll just tell you a quick story here. Years ago, when I was in college, there was an accountant. I would rather have root canal 7 days a week than to take an accounting class for the rest of my life. I spent all those years being ashamed of it. And one day this sage, who was an accounting professor, it had been raining for 2 weeks in Michigan during that time. And I'm falling asleep, and so to the rest of the class. And all of a sudden this man says, hey, have you noticed? Look outside for a second. And all of a sudden, you know, everybody starts waking up and they look outside. And he says, look outside. He said, you know, you realize when it starts to rain, the air just instantly gets to be fresher. And just think about it. And all of a sudden everybody starts perking up. You start to think, well, what is this man saying? He says, just think about it. So all the water comes down, brings all the pollution out of the atmosphere. Birds come out after the worms come out, and life springs eternal. And what my point about this is, I spent all those years being ashamed of the fact that if I'm going to be a business owner, how can I not be good at accounting or bookkeeping? And so to this day, you know what I do? I say the hell with it. I don't worry about projections. I don't worry about numbers. I worry about that customer in front of me. I worry about the relationship. I don't give a damn about the transaction, because there's nothing more attractive than looking a customer in the eye, having them understand that you don't care whether you're selling something today. What you care is giving of yourself. There's nothing more beautiful than a human being that gives of themselves, because the more you give of yourself, that customer is going to give you back tenfold. At that point, that's just the law of the universe.
People purpose before profits. You hear that a lot lately.
Amen.
How about you, Jerry?
So the question, the original question that I don't
want to
get. Are
you doing the things you love to do versus the things you don't love to do?
You know, I was going to restate that just to make sure that I was on the same track, because I'm listening to Bill preach and I'm thinking, God, I love this guy. I wish we were closer, right?
Amazing man, wise.
Right? So to answer your question, am I doing the things that I love to do? Without question. The big part of that, last year, we were gone 143 days traveling. This year, we're going to be on track for about $120. So last year's 4.5 months. This year, a solid 4 months, 3 months that we're gone. And, you know, that's the stuff that I like to do today. My marketing that I like to do, that I thrive on doing, is my job today. I don't really I visit like Bill. I like to visit with my with our customers. I come up, I shake their hand, say how you doing, right? How's your kid? How's you know? We just catch up on our old clients and visit with the new ones. And people come in. I've had people come in and say, "Can I get your autograph?" Because we do television and radio spots, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, you're so and so." Yeah, no. Here, how can I help you? You know, we're here to help. That's all. No big head, none of that ego business. And if I'm here, we're here to help you. And I love what I do with my company and with my job. And the coaching business, I loved it so much that I started it and made it official this year. And so that takes over some time that took away from some of our travel time this year. And it's going like gangbusters, and we're loving that too. Well, so yes.
No doubt you would be a great coach. Now we're coming up to 47 minutes of the hour.
Uh-oh.
And I'm going to, I know it's amazing how quickly this thing went. And I think we got a lot of, we covered some of the areas that I was looking for. Remember, it's about the future. The future people are going to listen to this, and they may be motivated to go out, number one, read the book, but to realize that you were all in there. You were in their shoes if they're struggling right now. So I want to ask each of you to provide any advice to owners that are stuck in the technician mode. I want you to look in that camera, and I want you to give your best opportunity that you look at me and say, "Hey, Carm, you've got to boom, boom, boom. You got to do this in order to get yourself to work on your business."
Okay. Well,
Greg.
Here's another statement that a quote out of the book. It says, "It is self-evident that businesses, like people, are supposed to grow. And with that growth comes change. Instead, most businesses are operated according to what the owner wants, as opposed to what the business actually needs." So what I think I would say to somebody who is struggling in, right, what I would say to somebody who's struggling and stuck in technician mode is that there is a balance between being a technician and being the manager and being the entrepreneur or owner. There's that, it's a fine balance in the middle somewhere is where you have to be. Every once in a while, you're going to have to go be a tech. Every once in a while, you're going to have to go in and do your number crunching because you have to make sure the health of the company is right. But you also have to have good, solid vision towards the future and because part of your job is to make sure that your company has a long life. And remember, it's an entity all by itself. So these are kind of the things that are really huge. So if you're stuck in a technician mode, you got to reach out. You got to always aspire to be better than you are, better tomorrow than you are today. And so that's where the reading and the stretching of yourself comes in. And I love what Bill was saying from Conversations with God. The thing about wanting, the universe puts you in the state of want. So if you say, "I want more money," you will always be in a state of want. So if you say, if you show gratitude and be thankful for what you have, then you will have that back. You will have enjoyment. And it's just really important to get those concepts down because it's all inside. Okay. I think that's what Bill was trying to say.
He was. How powerful. Thank you. Wow. I'm going to actually let the philosopher go last. And then there's a great question that is up here from Frank. We'll catch that at the end. But Jerry, some great words to a struggling technician who needs to become an entrepreneur.
Again, I'm just going to continue with, you don't know what you don't know.
Okay.
Find someone, find a mentor. Jim Rohn said it. He said, some people, they learn from their own failures. Some people learn from the failures of others. The smartest man learns from the successes of other people. It's much easier to be successful if you copy what successful people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of trying to forget what the failures and learn from other people's failures, let's learn from their successes. Find somebody that you can speak with. Find somebody. There's got to be a shop owner close to you that has more success. When I was struggling, I looked around and said, I want to find the biggest, baddest, coolest shop out there, and I want to talk to them, and I want to find out what the heck they're doing that I'm not doing so I can make my business better, so I can make myself better. And you're right, Greg. It's all starting right here between your ears. It's the whole problem is here. You have to first realize that you're not the greatest thing out there, and you may be the best tech. Please understand, this is nothing personal, but there's a million techs out there that do a great job. Just because the way you do it does not mean that's the only way to get it done. Mm-hmm. And if you want to grow your company, you must stop being so much of a control freak. Once you have your systems, once you have your processes and you have things documented, then you can make sure that they're done to your standard. But you cannot. I could not run the shop that I run if I go over and look over every technician's shoulder on every car they work on. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? I could not have any technician. No one would. Who would work for a nut like that? Are you kidding? So you have to empower your people. You have to give them the tools to be successful. You have to train them. And you know what? You as the owner of your business, it starts with you. You cannot expect your people to go to school if you're not willing to go to school. And if you take on the reins of being an owner, going to school does not mean how to fix a Duramax. Going to school means how to run your business. Go to school means what does a P&L statement look like and why is that important to you? Go to school means learn HR. What are the rules? What's the law? Okay, you need to, as the owner of the business, it's on your shoulders. You must step up to the plate without question and show the people, show your people, your employees and your customers. And I'll say this again. You know, some people say, I want happy customers. I'll tell you what, if you take care of your employees, they will be happy and they will make sure your customers are happy. Right. I don't even know how to fill out a ticket anymore. I don't want to do that, but my people are the best. You call my shop at any time. You come secret shop me. You do whatever you like. I am so proud of my people, and I thank them every single day. And I tell them every single day, each of them, how much I appreciate them. And, hey, I just found a new school I want us to go to. And I'm telling you, that makes a huge difference.
Did you see the side comments? It says, preach it, brother.
I've seen that single writer.
We need a collective amen for Jerry.
Amen. Definitely made me chuckle there when it pops up.
I'm sorry, guys. This is something I'm really passionate about.
I know.
I thrive on helping my employees become the best that they can be. And you know what? If one of them wants to leave and open up a shop for themselves, you know what? I'm going to be there to help them. I'm going to go over there and show them how to set up their shop because, you know, the more successful they are, the more successful we're going to be in turn.
Yeah, absolutely. In the industry, stop the fighting and start helping. I couldn't have picked three better. Oh my God, it's amazing. I have to pat myself on the back because Mr. Nalu is up next.
There we go.
And I know this is. I mean, no pressure.
Oh no, you guys are way too kind, Jerry. As I was looking at you, how beautiful it is to see somebody with that kind of passion, because you know you don't look at yourself in the mirror to see what it is that drives a human being, which that drives the soul to be something. And what I'm getting at is not to this needs to be drummed into our heads, especially for those that think that if only I had resources, I could you know, if only I had, you know, Jerry's, you know, 30,000 foot shop. If only I had Gary's, technical ability. If only I had, Bill's hair. There's no hair, so that's nothing. I can't brag about that. If only I had that. But the fact of the matter is, we think in ways that when you say to somebody, "What is it that you want to be? What do you think that you?" They say, "Well, I want to be a great mechanic. I want to be a great business owner." I'm sorry, that's not a state of being. That what you're saying is that I want to do this thing called mechanicking. I want to do this thing called businessing. And what you have to get your head wrapped around, it's that a state of being, a soul that searches for a state of being is one that says, I want to be helpful. I want to be wisdom and clarity. And so what you do is you have your excuse as an auto repair shop owner is you have a captive audience. A customer walks in the door and thinks it's the worst day on earth. It's snowing out there. He's broken down. And all of a sudden you find a way to either get him a rental car or get him to work or find a way to pick up the kids if she's, you know, if there's a single mom, or do the repair for free, or whatever it is it takes for you to feel like you added to somebody's life today. And there's nothing more valuable than that. And I'll finish with this one last thing here. We often talk about how somebody is rich and we measure it monetarily. Well, let's talk about money here for a second. Money only has value, just like any other energy in this world, only has value when you're giving it away. In fact, if you hang on to it, you'll physically see it disintegrate. And from a value standpoint, it starts to degrade. But we, being the geniuses that we are in society, we give these things, we artificially inflate it with this thing called interest rates. We make you think that there's value in hanging on to it. Well, hang on to it. But the fact of the matter is, if you're not giving away your, if you're not giving yourself away every single day of your life, you're robbing yourself of the contrast that life is. How can I call myself generous if I don't put myself in an opportunity where I have employees that need me to be generous with my time, with my talent? And so I guess that would be what I would close with. Is anybody who's listening to this podcast from here on, if you want to pick up the phone and call me at Interstate Auto Care, give me 5 minutes notice and I'll find a quiet spot to talk you off the ledge, because I've been there. Mm-hmm. I've been there. There's days when I'm there now. And there's no shame in that.
No,
I would say that any of us here on this panel, is there a day where you'd say, man, am I insane to be doing this for a living still? Yeah. And then you go home, you regroup, and you realize how grateful you are to be made of that stuff, that perseverance.
Isn't it amazing how I can say, well, Bill, you're so successful, you've never had a bad day, and Greg and Jerry. And it's so not true. It's tough, and it's a struggle every day, right. And it makes us better for that. Hey, I'm in awe for the input that you provided, for the legacy that this recorded podcast is going to have for the listeners of the future. It's going to be an evergreen thing for everyone. I want to thank our listeners, especially Frank out there in Phoenix. Sometimes it does require drastic moments to do or die in your enterprise to make changes. Great points. That's from Frank Butkus Lloyd's episode 25. Wow. Now, Frank is just like you guys. He's a larger than life kind of guy. And man, I appreciate him. He's great with Twitter. He's doing some great aggressive things. Single rider four. Thanks for hanging out with us. Great comments. And I can't tell you guys how much I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. Thanks, guys.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been great. Thank you so much. Happy holidays.
Yep.
Happy holidays too.
Same to you guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.